On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Emma Corcoran, who spent a lot of years at Selective Insurance in my home state of New Jersey and recently founded an eponymously named firm, Emma Corcoran Consulting. For those who can safely surf, she's at emmacorcoranconsulting.com. Welcome to the program, Emma.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I like that term eponymously. Eponymous means self-named, or because I had to look it up. I was in the Wall Street Journal like years ago when I founded Aartrijk. There was I knew a reporter. We talked with her and she said Peter owns an eponymously named firm. I'm like, what does that mean, eponymous? So I just like to use it when I can. So anyway,
I like it. It sounds like I was more intentional versus lack of creativity.
Yeah. Well. You know, you are a brand now, so you have to be larger than life, my friend. So, all right, let's talk about where you're from originally, how this all got started. I'm excited to talk to you.
Wow, thanks. So, also from New Jersey, I'm from a rural northwest town called Green Township. Born and raised, went to college in Jersey, at Mandia in Jersey, and I'm a big Jersey girl.
Yeah, it's great. Yep. That portion of New Jersey is just beautiful, where it kind of meets Pennsylvania and New York, right? Way up there.
Yeah, yeah. Selective, Branchville's super rural too. So if anyone is making the trek there, know that you cannot get an Uber.
I know. When I worked at the Big Eye, I flew up to Newark a few times, and I was truly astonished how long a ride it was, but it almost was worth it because of just the scenery. And I hope it doesn't get screwed up, because Jersey kind of gets a bad rap because most people are heading from like Philly to New York or back again. And they, you know, it's got a certain, shall we say, scent. And because all the refineries, I get it. It's not very pleasant. But if you go southwest down the shore or into the Pine Barrens and then Atlantic City and Cape May and all those beautiful places along the Jersey Shore, and then northwest where you were, is incredible, because that's where the mountains are and lakes and Delaware River, you know, the water gap. It's beautiful.
It's got a lot to offer. I mean, where else can you go to the beach, get to Philly, get to New York, go, you know, some great shopping in Jersey, and, you know, you've got the mountains as well, and mountains being Lewis Branch up in Colorado Mountains, but you know, you could do a little skiing, some bunny hills here.
Yeah, no, it's really pretty. And I also, I really miss the Jersey food, you know, like real pizza pie, real Italian food, you know, it's just everywhere else, it just seems fake, you know.
Taylor ham, you know, Taylor ham. All the good stuff. Yeah, I am a big foodie. My husband loves to cook and I love to eat, so that works out really well.
Yeah, it's we're at the part of Jersey where I grew up in New Brunswick area. It was like on the cusp of whether you're a New York fan or a Philly fan, but down there we called our Taylor ham was called pork roll. Is that what you guys call it up there, or is it just a southern?
North Jersey's Taylor ham, South Jersey's pork roll.
Yeah I went into
you're right between that, like Yankees, Philly, you know, you got the Jets, Nets, Giants, yeah.
Rangers, Islanders.
Devil, yep.
So I went to a deli in, because I lived in Northern Virginia, Fairfax, Virginia for like 30 years. And I finally found this really good deli in Fairfax called Chutzpah, right? So I go in there, guy's a Giants fan. He has all this stuff on the wall about the Giants. And then, but he has every kind of like, They serve everything. They have the best like pastrami, and they have like liverwurst. They have bologna. They have every single kind of meat. And of course, it's all terrible for you, but what the heck? So I said, hey, do you guys have pork roll? He looks at me like I got six eyes, you know. He goes, this is a New York deli, not a Jersey deli. No pork roll. That wasn't right. Anyway, let's get back to you, Emma, okay? How did this, so Green, you said Green County, is that right?
Green Township. Dublin
Green
County.
Township. So what was next? What, where did you go to school and how did you get to Selective?
Yeah, so I went to Rowan University for my undergrad, and I had an opportunity. My mom's friend saw an advertisement for the Selective internship program in the newspaper and told my mom. And I went to the internship fair, and I was fortunate enough to be one of 22 interns the following summer. Really had no connection to Selective. I lived about 25 minutes away, hadn't heard of it, just kind of was looking to beef up my resume, and it was a paid internship, which was awesome. But that being said, I have to give kudos to the Selective team. It was a really good internship. I had 4 internships in undergrad, and I actually learned a ton, you know, from Outlook, meeting coordination, email etiquette, even simple things like, you know, networking, kind of working through meeting new people, presenting yourself. And yeah, so I came back the following summer, I interned twice, and then I had the opportunity to present at the capstone program at the end of the summer in front of the C-suite. And I loved it. I loved being on stage. I loved presenting. It was a lot of fun. It was a little less daunting than when you are employed by that company. You know, I was, the next day I was leaving to go back to school, so I probably had a little more confidence going into it. But Joe Rafferty reached out after and said they had an opening. And so it worked out. And yeah, I progressed from a market research analyst to my latest role with Assistant Vice President of National Partners.
Cool. So the whole thing about learning email etiquette, I know that may to some people sound a little odd, but those good on Selective for doing that. I think young people, now you've been in, you know, your career is, you know, you're on the launch pad and you're doing something new. You've been at it a while, but young people coming out of school, I think that's where they need a lot of help. Like how to work, like what are the rules of work? How do you write an email? How do you, you know, when is texting okay? If you do text, you know, watch, you know, you gotta watch everything, but also, you know, how to literally shake someone's hand, how to look at them in the eye, how to work, because unfortunately the Gen Zs have been sort of dealing with, you know, work at home, school at home. It's been a rough road for them and they need some help. So it's good on Selective for teaching people, not just obviously the insurance industry, but how to work, period. Right.
Yeah. And it was different then, right? You know, we're talking 2011. So this is pre-COVID times,
right.
The casual work attire. So it was a business setting. So there was, it was a little bit different, but I think to your point, you know, there wasn't, we didn't have Slack or Microsoft Teams or any. So it's Gen Z coming into the workforce now. There's a lot of different communication channels, a lot of different things that you've got to kind of learn. We were we used Outlook. That's not something I'd used in college. I would argue probably most students don't use Outlook. They're probably more familiar with like a Gmail or a Slack. So there's a lot of learning curves that go into it and taking time to set them up for success and say, hey, this is how you book a meeting room. You know, you can't just email somebody and say, let's meet in conference room C. You actually have to secure the conference room.
Right.
And
right.
You had to do it.
Right. So you mentioned a little bit of your evolution at the company. And just one last question about Selective. Then I want to ask you about the new company and what gives you joy and what you're doing now. But you said market research analyst, and then you went on to... So what were some of the things you went on to, and when you were doing those things, what did you notice about it feeling less like work and more like fun? What were those things you were doing?
Oh, I love that question. So so I came in as a market research analyst, and that was very short-lived. And frankly, I didn't love the market research aspect of it. But I had an opportunity with our CEO at the time, Greg Murphy. He had a real passion around customer experience. And back then, that was a little innovative, right? Selective is a independent agency-only distribution channel. So we hadn't really connected directly with customers. Everything that the organization did was through our agency partners. But it was really a mutual, or it is really a mutual shared customer experience. And so we were really focused on that. We built out 8 operational customer surveys. So we were getting feedback direct from the customer. And he wanted to build out a program that would help our agencies do the same thing, help them really understand the customer experience that they were providing. And so I had an opportunity with help, of course, to build out the ACE program, the Agency Customer Experience Program. So we developed a program for our independent agency partners. We would send their customers, all of their customers, so not just selected, but any customer they had an email address for, we would send a survey on their behalf. It would be totally branded like the agency. It didn't say anything about selected. Apt, you know, short, maybe 10 questions. We'd analyze the results. And then I would go on site in the agent's office and kind of go through a session, because the most important part about asking for feedback is, what do you do when you get it? So we would go in, we'd present the result, and then I would work with their team. And I typically ask leadership to stay out of the room at this point. I'd work with the team on, what can we do? Here's what the customer said. What ideas do you have that we could do differently to resolve some of these things? And then I bring in leadership after, and the team would have a chance to present back. Here's the ideas that we came up with. And they'd really, we'd leave the program with real actionable steps. And I loved it. I loved being in front of the group. I loved seeing the light bulbs go off in the room. Like, oh my gosh, we do this for our personal lines customer, but we never thought about doing it for small business. I think that would be a really cool idea. And so having people, you know, kind of just bringing out the ideas that are there, but in a way where they can all see it, agree on it, and kind of move forward with a real tactical plan leaving the session. So I was able to do that. I loved it. And then I kind of went into agency programs and thought, what else can I bring to independent agents that maybe they wouldn't otherwise have? And Selected is great about that. They have a lot of unique programs that they offer their agency partners that truly help the agency overall, not just with their selective book. So we brought our agent DISC, which is a communication assessment. We used it as a team building session. It really helped. I would say it really helped the producers and account managers, CSRs, understand one another and their communication styles, which in my experience tended to be a little bit different. So it kind of helped them understand one another and how to communicate better together. And then I also had the opportunity from there to build out the Women's Leadership Program, which is a real, real passion of mine. And again, I was in front of agency partners doing something where I had an audience, I had a group of people who were just really energized. They were learning something new, light bulbs were going off, and I was making a difference. And so that's really, to answer your question, where it didn't feel like work for me. It was a lot of fun, and I felt like I was having an impact.
Yeah, whereas market research analyst feels more like a kind of a government job.
It was a little more reactive, right? Researching kind of what's out there versus being at the front line and making a change.
Not to disparage my friends out there who are market research analysts, because my brother is a market research analyst. He works for another insurance carrier. Loves research. You know, he loves quantitative, qualitative, secondary, primary. He does it all, and he just loves it. So, all these things you mentioned that you love doing have in common, like sort of group working with groups, right? Mm-hmm. It's the people side. You know, it's so interesting. You can talk all you want about the numbers required to make money on insurance, whether you're an agent or a carrier. It's so important to get the numbers right, because no one makes any money if you don't. But there, 90% of this world that we're in, it comes down to people, it comes down to communications, comes down to soft skills. It comes down to our ability to influence people, understand them, and get them to act and do things. And it's not the stuff, it's the stuff around the stuff. And you've been to so many independent agents, Emma. Like, it's like you've seen, you've probably been in the same meeting 1,000 times like me, where you look around the room and say, wow, this is a small agency. You guys don't even talk to each other. Again, not to disparage my small independent agent leaders out there, but it doesn't matter the size of the organization. They all have issues, and it comes down to human communication. So I love this. We're going to talk about all these things some more, because you've taken that experience, you've taken that love for working in groups, as you said, to a new effort. So tell us about your company and what your target customer is, and folks listening out there may want to chat with you. But like, what need are you filling, and what's kind of your vision for the better world. If you're, you know, you've gone through these sessions and something happens, so talk about your firm a little bit.
Thanks. I'd love to. So I'm a corporate consulting, and I offer kind of four programs, right now. My target customer, I would say, is really small businesses. I would say small businesses that maybe don't have the resources or don't have training staff on site that want to bring in someone like me to facilitate a session. And then the sessions that I run, to your point, I'm leaning into the insurance network that I have, been in the industry for 15 years. So not to say I wouldn't work with another industry, but I love this one and I have a strong network here. So leaning in to see, to help support those independent agencies with programs that increase engagement with their team, empower their team, empower their leadership team, support the customer experience. So yeah, so I have a couple different programs that to me really elevate the impact that a team can have. And in insurance, you know, it's a really relationship-based industry, like you said. So the people who have been in the industry, you know, we're all well connected. It feels smaller probably than it is, but they've got such strong tenure in our space and they've got a ton of knowledge. And so I've always found that when you take the time to bring a diverse group of perspectives together, you're really going to find the best solution. So whether it's how you communicate better with your customers or it's figuring out how you can be a center of influence in your community, whatever the business problem is, bringing a program to that small business and saying, hey, let's utilize your team, the experience they have, the knowledge they have, and bring it out in a way where we've got a tactical roadmap for answering that question or solving that problem.
Yeah. So it's bringing people together. And are you still doing the research components, the customer experience work you mentioned, which and the customer, for those listening, could be anybody. Could be if you're a carrier, your customer might be the agent. If you're an agent, your customer might be a certain group of personal lines customers, or it could be your commercial lines accounts, certain size. And it could also, and this is just my opinion, Emma, but I think a customer is also, if you're an agency owner or you're the CEO of a company, your employees are another kind of, your employees are a customer as well. The associates who work there, in fact, they're probably the most important customer, to get that part right. It sounds like your programs are designed to sort of bring people together, talk about the stuff they're only talking about now individually in hallways, at the water cooler or whatever, and bring them together and just find new ways to work together, right? So it's like building the brand, kind of rebuilding everything from the inside out. Is that a correct assessment on my part?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way of putting it. And again, I think it's, you know, your employees for any business are likely your most valued asset. And we all know the stats around bringing in a new person versus retaining somebody. And so often I feel like the employees have the answer, or they have a piece of the answer, but it's bringing the group together and kind of pulling it out and saying, okay, we all agree we've got this challenge. How can we solve for it and solve for it in a way where, you know, whether it's an efficiency gain, economic gain, whatever it is, really leverage the power of the team to come up with that answer. And for my programs, again, if you're talking about team building, so something, you know, I want my team to, maybe it's a new team. You've got an agency that you've acquired another agency and you're really looking to just kind of get to know one another. DISC is great for that. DISC is all about communication style. It's a way for you to understand, hey, here's who my audience is. Maybe I need to adapt my communication style to better interact with them, whether it's a producer talking to an account manager or an account manager talking to a customer. Or like you said, maybe the leadership team and how they're delivering messages. Maybe they can adjust the way they're communicating to better serve their employees. But that's one of the programs. It's a great program. It's really fun. We do team building. I'll do an exercise. You know, we've done, I recently did a, you know, gingerbread house competition, you know, paper airplanes, things like that to really showcase at the end of the program how the different style, how they actually come into play when you're doing something under kind of those circumstances with a, you know, clock running and you've got the team all trying to really quickly put together a gingerbread house, you know, you'll definitely see the styles come out as they're trying to work together on that.
That's cool. Yeah. So what is it about your love of working with groups? Where do you think that came from? And not everybody's can do that. It's almost in a way, it's like being almost like a school teacher. You know, there's a lot going on in the room. There's a lot going on in the room. How do you do it and why do you do it?
So it's funny you mentioned school teacher. So my mom is an immigrant, and she's recently retired, but she was an elementary school librarian. And she's more reserved, but definitely can command a room. You know, she's elementary school, kindergarten through, I don't know, fifth grade. So to your point of bringing everyone together and getting them to kind of pay attention and learn something, I think it's that mix of my mom and my dad. My dad is an entrepreneur also, and he's a sales guy. So he can talk to anybody. And I think I'm just fortunate to have a unique blend of being able to kind of command the room, make sure that the people in the back are participating, that someone who might be a little bit more reserved, a little more quiet, have an opportunity to participate. But then also, you know, I've got the sales aspect and hopefully a little bit of the charisma that my dad has to kind of sell the idea of the program and then bring it together where I've now got a room, I've got their attention, I'm making sure everyone's engaged and participating, and ideally they're walking away having learned something.
Yeah. You mentioned DISC as one of the programs. The other one I think you mentioned to me in the past is something called Colby, and it measures, the index measures how you get things done when you're free to be yourself. What is that about? What does that get at?
So Colby's really, it's a unique program, and not as many people have heard of it. So Kathy Colby came up with this research concept that there's three parts of the mind. There's your cognitive, so things like IQ tests would measure your cognitive. Your affective, which is things like, you know, DISC, Myers-Briggs, those kinds of assessments. And then what Kathy had coined your conative part of the mind. And that's really your natural instinct, how you would organically approach solving a problem. And that's what Colby measures. So for example, for me, I'm a quick start. So that means when I've got a problem or I'm facing a challenge, the way that I would naturally go in to solve that problem is brainstorming. I love to come up with a bunch of different ideas. And that's where I get energy. It's something that I enjoy doing, and versus market research, right? So my follow through isn't as high of a score on Colby. And so that means that I'm a little bit more high level versus in the weeds. And it's not to say you can't do it. It's just, that's not really, it takes a little more energy for me to do that piece of it. So it's all about how you naturally solve problems. And she's done research where programs like Myers-Briggs DISC, those might change, right? So I can say for me personally, my DISC style changed after I had children, right? So not drastically, but it changed a little bit and you get a different perspective. Your Colby index isn't going to change. If, you know, she's measured children, you know, from 10 and then measured them again when they're in their 40s, and that index is the same. So it's just kind of how your brain is wired.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's a cool one. And not as many people are familiar with it. I think DISC, you know, I've been facilitating DISC for 10 years. I think DISC is a little more well known, but each of them has their purpose. I like DISC for team building. I like Colby for leadership. You know, it's taking those high potential people or a group of leaders and really having them dive in, because to me, if you understand yourself better, then you're going to understand how to lead others and work with others better. And so I like Colby for a leadership session.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you mentioned your work at Selective with the Women's Leadership Program, and I know with your new firm, as you know, whether it's a paid gig or just something you're passionate about, this cause, your fellow insurance professionals, helping them and bringing them together. What is why do you have so much passion for that, Emma? Why do you make time for that?
So, this actually started with Teresa Caro, who was one of the Senior Vice President, Regional Manager of Selective New Jersey Region. And back in 2016, I believe, she was moving into that role and had kind of an aha moment where she recognized she had a lot of advocates and a strong network of men across her agency distribution plant, but not kind of as many women. And so she wanted to take an opportunity to really intentionally bring women together. And she reached out to me. I actually did a kind of like a DISC light session with the group. And I went to our Jersey office, and it was the first time in my career that I had been in a room with only women. And we know the stats, right? So there's more women than there are men in the industry. It's about 60-40, but not when it comes to leadership, right? Then the numbers flip, right? It's really, really not as many women in the C-suite when it comes to the industry. And so having that dedicated space, the energy was just, I mean, the room was buzzing. The vulnerability was really, really cool. Like the idea that people kind of felt safe and felt like they could be vulnerable and share. There wasn't, it was all about lifting one another up. And so I left that meeting. And again, that was just for our New Jersey agents at the time. You know, there was probably 15, 20 of them that came to that event. And I went back to my EVP at the time, Chuck Musilli, and I said, Chuck, I got to do this nationally. We got to do this for all the women across all of our agency plans. Like, it's going to be such a, you know, positive impact in our state. And Ricky, the industry didn't have, at least in the independent agency space, we really didn't have women's leadership programs at that time. So it was really unique for Selective to come out and do something specific to women in insurance agencies. Some of the larger organizations, insurance carriers, had things internally, ERGs, but nothing externally facing. And so in 2017, we held our first women's agency leadership conference at the Branchville office, the corporate office. And it was just an amazing event. And from there, we kept it going. And annually, we had an in-person event up until COVID. And that really, you know, the silver lining there was we were able to expand our reach during COVID because we ended up really focusing on our distribution list. So we were able to do virtual programming. And, you know, before when I left, we had about 800 women on our distribution list, you know, that we were able to connect with and reach out to and bring these programs to them at no cost and on topics that they were really interested in. And again, I've got two little girls. I've seen, you know, things play out where I feel that there's just an opportunity in our space to elevate the women leaders, and to be able to do something that has an impact in our industry like that is really cool. So to your point of whether I'm getting paid to do it or it's just an opportunity to speak to a group and help elevate women, I really enjoy doing it, and I'm happy to offer that kind of programming.
That's really cool. So the 60-40, 40-60, I guess I knew that intuitively. So the 800 women on the list, how many were they all like essentially agents, or were there some other, you know, industry folks on there?
Was really focused on, so you had to be a Selective appointed agent.
Okay.
So you could be any level in the agency. Our programming leaned a little bit more seasoned, I don't like using the word seasoned, tenure.
Right.
So,
yeah, know, right.
No wealth even stakes up there, but yeah, tenure.
So you probably had principals, but also a lot of seasoned CSRs as well, you think, or?
Strong tenured account managers, operations leaders, marketing managers, personal lines, commercial lines managers. So that covered the differences in the industry, right? So you have 60% of the industry being female, but from a leadership and from an ownership perspective, the stacks are much smaller. I don't have it in front of me, but the agency universe study through the Big Eye does a great assessment every 2 years where it looks at the demographics of the independent agency channel, and it'll kind of highlight you know, some of the demographics, and it's typically around, I'd have to look at it. I don't want to misquote the numbers, but it's small.
Yeah, I think, okay, prediction, and the listeners can say I'm full of crap, but I think it's going to change rather dramatically with the millennials and Gen Zs coming into the workforce, because I think they're going to discover insurance, specifically more specifically, I should say the independent agent and broker as a fantastic place to work that aligns with their values and what they're looking for in terms of a purpose-driven industry. And that's kind of like maybe wishful thinking, but I kind of see it, and I see a lot of women. And by the way, a lot of women consumers, the customers, more and more business owners who are buying would like to buy from female owners. Let's face it, right? Also, personal lines customers. You know, women buying from a female agent, producer, an owner. That's an incredible connection that can be made. So I'm kind of excited for changing that that narrative you described.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Peter. I mean, I think, and I've always thought, insurance is such a wonderful career. And you know, you've been around a long time in the industry, as have I. And so people always talk about how they fell into insurance. And I think part of the challenge is that sentiment, right? Like, we need to stop saying, I fell into insurance, I didn't choose this, or, you know, oh, I took this job, but I never thought I'd stay. No, we want it to be a proactive. There's a reason people have stayed. Maybe you didn't choose insurance, but you've stayed for 30 years. Yeah. There's a reason that you stayed, because it's a great industry to work for. I love the purpose-driven idea. I think that's one of the challenges the industry faces around consumer sentiment, is really kind of changing the narrative on big insurance companies and having kind of that negative negative persona to something that's more around, to your point, you know, your insurance agency, your independent insurance agency tends to be a pillar of your community. So you're shopping local, you're supporting local, they know you, they're probably sponsoring the Little League team in town or doing a food drive or, you know, something to that effect. And they're there for you in often some of the worst situations in your life, right? They're there to help put you back together. And so changing that narrative about how we fell into these careers and more, I chose to be here because of a purpose-driven opportunity, because I can make a difference in my community, in the lives of my neighbors and businesses, is something that, that I'm passionate about as well.
Yeah. It's like I feel like people are often apologizing for working in the insurance industry. It's like I didn't know, but it's been great. But they're still kind of, would they recommend it to another one of their, you know, someone else to work there? It's kind of like lukewarm. I think as an employer brand, that's one issue for sure. And I think it's going to get better. I feel like when people figure this out, I can have flexible work. I can see exactly how I'm doing, because insurance is all about, you know, the numbers, and there's a lot of numbers. I can go after any kind of job in the insurance industry, just like I can in any other company. You know, if you can be in marketing, can be a lawyer, can be an HR, you can be leadership,
communication, data, you can do what you do. IT, yeah, IT. Absolutely. Training and development.
Mm-hmm. All those different jobs are there. They give back to the community. It's another one, right? And you know, giving back, not just money, but they're, you know, a lot of agents spend a lot of time, and companies, of course, like Selective, they spend a lot of time in the community doing stuff. Yeah. So I think it's like one of these secrets. But it also layered over that employer brand issue is just the concept of insurance being like, you know, I put all these premiums in the bank, and now I want to get out my premiums, you know, from the bank. You know, it's, so why not cheat on the claim? You know, why not hire a lawyer? Why not? It's you know, it's gotten all twisted, Emma, you know, it over the years. And I don't know if that piece is getting any better, because there's a lot more angst on the liability side with lawyers going after insurance companies who are, I think, outmatched, outgunned in the claims departments. You know, I'm going way off script here, but I feel like there's just this lingering distrust of how it all works, the understanding of it, the awareness of it, how it works, the appreciation of what the insurance policy is all about. And so those two things, the employer brand and the product called insurance, are both kind of twisted up together, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's, to your point, it's that lack of understanding of really what the policy does, what it means for you. And I think, again, the whole idea of insurance is it's cool, right? So if you want to contact a lawyer, or, you know, I know carriers are seeing this, somebody overseas is reaching out saying, hey, you should contact a lawyer and we'll pay for it. What you're doing to the other consumers in your community, right? Because carriers are forced to raise the rates then, because this isn't historically what the trends have shown in terms of where the premium needs to be to cover what's going on. So having this litigious environment it's not good for the consumer, it's not good for the carrier, it's not good for the agent. And to your point, I think it's really the lack of understanding, and it's tough, you know, insurance, it, for those that have looked at things like the CIC and the training and stuff, you got to really think through the policy, have a good understanding of it. Mm-hmm. That's what the agent's there for. They're going to break it down for you in the same way that you don't have to totally understand a contract because your lawyer can break it down for you. That's what the agent does, right?
Yeah.
They're there to say, hey, this is what your policy means. This is what it's protecting. And this is what we've intentionally chosen to exclude from your policy, right? Here's where we set the limit because XYZ. The agent is so important. And I think the lack of understanding comes from, you know, if a consumer is going online and they're just doing a policy and entering some data, and they don't realize that they're, you know, there's an exclusion or that a limit is set in a certain way because they just answered a couple questions online and really don't have anybody there to be that trusted advisor.
Yeah. Yeah. That the customer experience, the agent's customers, I'm sure in your research and working in these groups over the years, you might have uncovered like some ways in which agents could improve communications with with their customers. Because one of the main drivers of E&O claims is just, you never told me I didn't have that umbrella, or you didn't never told me this was excluded. And they might not have, you know, they might not have had a systematic process for communicating well ahead of the renewal, for example, what they have, what they don't have, what the agency recommends, you know, that it's a process, right, of communicating. So I think insurance consumers don't always want to buy everything the agent's recommending or suggesting, but they really, in my experience, Emma, in research we've done, they really appreciate the effort. And that's what separates good agents from okay agents, is just making that effort on a regular basis to say, you know, let's talk about risk management. Let's talk about what you must have, what you should have, and what you think about, you know, that conversation.
Absolutely. And I think it comes down to the data, right? So in my experience, part of the challenge that agents face is around the data that they have about their policyholders, right? So whether they have a system that's outdated, or there's been a lot of acquisitions and now they've got three different systems, or they've got a CRM but it's not connected to their agency management system, etc. It's really having that insight into their book of business and knowing, hey, this small business customer is also a personal lines customer of ours, and not having two different contacts for that same customer, and being able, to your point, to set up a process that says, hey, I want to reach out to this person 90 days, 100 days prior to renewal. But you have to have a process in place for that to say, hey, this is triggering a flag in some system for my team to know, okay, it's time to reach out. And this customer, maybe the renewal dates aren't the same, or they're working with different carriers. And so it's several policies, and kind of, to your point, taking the time to really understand the customer, research what might be best for them in terms of risk management, and then connecting with them and getting their attention on it. And a lot of times, you know, I think you grasp the consumer's attention when you're sharing a story about a claim, right? Like, hey, this is preventable. This is what I'm trying to help you avoid. And that's what we do in insurance. We're there for the unexpected. Nobody plans on having, you know, a business income loss because the power goes out on Main Street and, you know, you're an ice cream shop and the freezer's, you know, all your ice cream melted, right? No one plans for that. But that's where we come in and say, hey, we're planning for the unexpected, so that if something happens,
yeah.
People are up.
Yeah. All right, Emma, as we wrap up here, a couple of questions for you, maybe on a more personal level. So in your, think about your school career, your internships, the time there, your work at Selective, and now launching your company. And are there things that you, or is there a thing you've learned, a mistake you made perhaps that, that you thought about later and said, oh, I here's what I learned from that. Was anything you can share about that experience?
Let me think about that. So I think how I would answer that is in my career, and again, I worked for an insurance company for 15 years, and it's an underwriting company. And I had a lot of advocates and mentors. I was very fortunate to have a lot of advocates and mentors who really felt that I would be more successful if I went through an underwriting route. And so
because you have such a great personality, that would be great for underwriting. You could tell them no with like a, in a really sweet way, you know?
Well, listen, hey, we need underwriters and I appreciate what they do. I shadowed them. I have my CIC. I tried to do things to build credibility in the underwriting discipline. But it just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It just was something where I felt, you know, I'm not passionate about doing this. And you know, you spend a lot of time at work. You know, you're away from your family, away from home. And if I'd be spending that kind of time away from my family and kind of my passions and what I like doing, then I really want it to be something that I'm enjoying and that I feel like I'm giving an impact. And so I think I spent a lot of time trying things as opposed to leaning into my strengths.
Yeah.
And I did, you know, I went with my gut. I had several mentors who I said, listen, that's not the route for me. I don't want to be one of 100 underwriters. I want to be the only Emma and be able to deliver something that nobody else is and be part of strategic conversations. And and so I think that's not that I made a mistake, but I spent a little, probably too much time looking at that as a weakness versus leaning into my strengths and saying, hey, I might not have that, but here's what I do have and here's what I can offer.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that a lot over the years and these podcast recordings. It's sometimes it's easier to find what you like the most when you take the longer road of finding what you don't like the most.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to know if you don't. Yeah. You don't know if you don't go. That's my father-in-law used to say, of course he was talking about bars, but, Is there any, do you have a personal mantra or piece of advice that sort of guides you as you get up in the morning and think about Emma Cork and consulting and how you're going to spend the days ahead and working with customers? Something that kind of works for you?
Yeah. So this is probably a little niche, but I want to be a role model to my little girls, right? So I want to be a risk taker. I want to do something different and look back and have no regrets that I didn't take that chance or I didn't try something. And so, yeah, being a role model is really at this point in my life, in my career, what's driving me. That's it. No, maybe progress over perfection, you know, just keep going, but it's mostly being a role model.
Yeah. It does change your perspective when you have kids. I have two girls as well. So I'm on the receiving end of a lot of lectures about dad, you can't say that anymore, dad. You can't say those things anymore.
mine are 2 and 4. So I've got a little time, hopefully, before I'm lectured. Yeah. Absolutely. When you're saying that your father-in-law's you don't know before you go, I was thinking about how I tell my daughter, my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old now, you don't know unless you try it, but it's mostly around food. Like, you don't know, you might like those Brussels sprouts. You got to try it.
Good for you. Good for you. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Emma, I wish you all the best with the firm and we'll see you. I'm sure we'll see you down the road at one of these events. Maybe you'll invite me to one of your workshops. I'd love to be, what do they call that when somebody sits in the back of the room and audits the class?
Yeah, fly on the wall.
Yeah, fly on the wall. But now all those topics, we too here love working with groups. It's very powerful. And I wish you all the best with it. I think listening to you talk about it, there's a certain joy in your voice. And if you love what you do, it's not work. And it's going to translate to success down the road.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.